Illegally Deaf is a podcast about overcoming obstacles. I'm Danny Burnside, and just this year, I was diagnosed with severe hearing loss. Oh, did I mention I'm a professional Hollywood voice actor? Funny how that goes. I've made the decision to own my disability and interview remarkable guests who are thriving in light of being disabled. Welcome to the Illegally Deaf Podcast. Tony, how you doing, brother?
Danny, how's it going?
Have you gotten any more degrees from Arizona State since the last time we spoke?
No, because I'm done with school.
Hilarious. What are the 4 degrees you got, Tony?
Oh my God. So I originally got my first degree in social work because I thought I wanted to be a social worker. About 2/3 of the way through it, I realized I didn't want to be a social worker. I left school with my social work degree that I wasn't going to use, got a job. That's when I decided to go back to school to get a degree in broadcast journalism. But when I went back to school, I found out that I needed a new foreign language. I hadn't done enough of the first foreign language, or they didn't count it. I don't remember the reason why. I needed a new foreign language. And so I decided to do German. And there's a story behind that too, which I can get to later if you want. Once I started studying German, I realized how much I really enjoyed it. And so I decided to double major in broadcast journalism and German. And then out of an act of desperation, when I was living in another state, I really wanted to come back to Arizona. So I applied to the German graduate program, and I kind of had a feeling that they were going to accept me. And so sure enough, they did. And I moved back to Arizona and got a master's degree in German studies. It's super convoluted life I've lived.
You know what's hilarious, Tony? I lived in Stuttgart, Germany for 1 year, Baden-Württemberg.
Interesting.
I did a 13th year of high school in Stuttgart, Germany. I was in 12th grade at my high school in California, and I applied for an exchange scholarship program, and I ended up getting it. Now, this was like through the first semester of my senior year. And I was like, well, I'm about to graduate. Is it cool if I still go? And you may know that some gymnasiums in Germany have 13 years of high school, kind of compared to our 12. In my second semester of my senior year, I started taking German 1 and German 2 simultaneously. I didn't speak one word of German before this. And I headed out to Stuttgart, Germany.
I love it. So you spent 6 months, 8 months, a whole school year in Stuttgart?
Just about, yeah. 8 months is probably more accurate.
That's awesome. So the kicker to this whole thing is that I've actually never been to Germany.
How's your German now? As terrible as mine?
No, you know, actually, mine is not bad, considering that I haven't actually studied it. So I graduated 2010. I definitely am rusty for sure, but I can hold a very, very basic conversation. And if I ever got lost in Stuttgart or anywhere else and nobody spoke English, I could probably survive.
You know, the thing is, everyone speaks English so proficiently there that they don't want to speak German with you at all. They just want to practice their English.
That's the worst part, right? That's the worst part about it, right?
Truly is. So guys, my guest today was born on a military base, and he attended 3 high schools within 4 years. He came into his own at Arizona State University, where, as I mentioned, he ended up getting 4 degrees. After being told for years that he should get into radio, he pursued broadcast journalism. It was a decision that completely changed the trajectory of his life. Later, he discovered power wheelchair soccer. Super cool. I'm such a huge sports fan. And he became an athlete for the first time. Combining his newfound journalism skills and his love for power soccer, he began broadcasting major tournaments all around the world. He was born with a rare condition called, and excuse me if I mispronounce this, Tony, arthrogryposis, a condition affecting the joints in all 4 limbs. Rising above disability, he has been playing power wheelchair soccer for 15 years, broadcasting it for 12 years, and coaching it for 9. Tony, it's my absolute honor to welcome you to the show, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Tony Jackson.
Danny, pleasure.
Exactly. Were you a sports fan at all growing up?
Oh my God, of course, man. My dad grew up in Western Pennsylvania, so I grew up watching the Pittsburgh Steelers. And I swear, football is the only sport my dad watches. NFL football is the only sport my dad watches. So I grew up watching the Steelers. But having grown up in the military, I didn't really have any allegiances to sports teams because I moved around so much. So I grew up watching the Steelers. And then I lived in New Jersey for a while. I became a New Jersey Devils fan, also a New York Mets fan. Basketball, I never really had a basketball team that I loved other than the Chicago Bulls, because in the 80s and 90s, when Michael Jordan was it, everybody was a Bulls fan.
Right there with you.
right? And so I never really had a basketball team that I absolutely loved. My dad, even after high school, when he graduated and went into the military, there was a local football league on base that he joined, and he played football there for a while too. So, I mean, sports were always a thing for me. And since I use a wheelchair, can't play football or any other running sport. And so I was always the referee or the scorekeeper or both. And that was my way to be involved in sports when I was young. And then power soccer came along. My goodness. 2006, I was in school for one of the 4 degrees that I got. And somebody living in the same dorm, residence hall for all you dorm nerds out there, I know it's a residence hall, told me about the sport called power soccer. Her description of the sport was, it's really fun. Me, not knowing how competitive I really was at that point in time, knew I didn't want fun. I knew I wanted something competitive. I wanted something where there were stakes involved in the sport. And so I just kind of dismissed it at that moment. Now, fast forward to 2007, I'm living in Virginia. The MLS championship game was being played in DC, and it was on my birthday, and I said, I have to go. So I bought a couple tickets for me, my brother, and a couple friends. We went to DC. Game was cool, but while I was there at the stadium, I sat with a bunch of other folks in wheelchairs. And the guy sitting next to me ended up becoming a great friend and mentor of mine. His name is Jerry Frick. He's no longer with us. He was sitting next to me, and he said to me, he says, hey, have you ever heard of power soccer? And I said, yeah, you know, somebody told me about it. And he hands me this DVD. He says, here, watch this DVD. If you like what you see, go find a team in your area. So super long story short, DVD sat on my desk for 3 weeks. I finally popped it in, and it was a highlight reel of the 2007 World Cup in Tokyo. I said, holy crap, look at these people in power chairs doing things in power chairs that most of us only ever imagined doing. I need to play this sport. It's now late 2008. I moved back to Arizona because, as I had mentioned, I was accepted into the German master's program. So I'm back in Arizona. Didn't really think about it. I'm on my way to the grocery store one day, and I see a sign outside the gym on campus that says, Arizona Disabled Sports. And so I think to myself, let me go inside and see what's going on. And sure enough, there's a power soccer tournament going on. So I started talking to some folks, got some names, got some numbers, showed up to my first practice the next week, and 15 years later, I can't math anymore. 15 years later, here I am talking to you about it.
Tony, have you been in a wheelchair since childhood?
I actually came out in the birthing hall in a wheelchair. So, wow. Yes.
Can you give us a little bit of a description or the backstory of your disability, just for the folks listening that aren't familiar?
Yeah,
with it?
Sure, for sure. So arthrogryposis multiplex congenita, the long name for what I have, is a congenital joint condition, which means I was born with it. So it affects all four of my limbs. I have very limited mobility. My joints don't bend very well. My legs kind of actually stick out, which makes traveling a lot of fun on an airplane. I have total sensation throughout my body, which I think for a lot of people who don't understand physical disabilities, they see me in a wheelchair and automatically think I have a spinal cord injury with loss of sensation, which is not the case. So I have total sensation throughout my body. I can move a tiny bit my arm, my right arm, which is what I use to control my chair. But other than that, I am in a chair for my waking hours every day.
Did you have to endure any surgeries given this condition?
Oh, yeah, sure. Oh, yeah. I was born with a hernia. So there was that to start off with. You probably can't, I don't know, maybe you can kind of, there's a dent in my arm from where my wheelchair joystick meets my arm. But, you know, I had a surgery on that elbow. Both of my feet have been operated on. Probably some other things that I'm not remembering right now. But I've had a few. Mostly when I was a child, not really anything since I sprung forth into adulthood.
So why Arizona State University in the first place? What led you to AZ State?
Oh, geez. Well, so my dad was stationed in Southern Arizona, and it was my senior year of high school. In fact, I had mentioned, well, you had mentioned to me that, to everybody, that I had attended 3 different high schools in 4 years, and my senior year was the third of 3 high schools. It was my senior year. I was living in Southern Arizona, Tucson, where the University of Arizona is located. I shall not fully acknowledge their existence. It was too close. And Northern Arizona University was too far. So I thought Arizona State's kind of in between. So I'm going to go there. I didn't want to be too close to my parents, but I also didn't want to be so far away that if something happened, they would need to drive 5 or 6 hours to get to me. So ASU was the choice. I visited the campus. I loved it. And then I spent the next 45 years of my adult life there learning.
Love that, degrees.
Yeah.
Must have been tough moving around so often as a teenager and also dealing with a disability.
You know, Danny, I don't know. I think that because it's the only thing I've ever known, I don't know how to manage it otherwise. You know, it's like kids are super resilient, right? Like kids just figure it out regardless of what's going on with them. So for me, really, like I didn't know anything else. And so I just did it. It's only been since I became adult and I understood all the things that my parents did unbeknownst to me growing up and all the effort they put in to make sure that where we were living was as accessible as possible. Again, I didn't know any better. I didn't know any different. So it was probably as hard for me as it was any other child moving around over the years. I did move back to South Korea. So I was born in South Korea on a military base. We did go back to that base during 2 of my 4 high school years. And that was actually a pretty good experience overall. On base, off base, South Korea was not super accessible. So I didn't venture much off base, but you know, everything I needed was within the military housing at that time.
Do you suppose that South Korea has become more accessible present day, or do you think they still face accessibility challenges?
You know, I don't know. I know that South Korea these days, especially Seoul, is a very technologically advanced city. Whether or not it's better in terms of accessibility, I don't know. I haven't been there since I left, and I don't really know anybody who lives there now who relies on accessibility. And so I can't really answer that question. I would hope so. It's been decades since I lived there, so I hope so. But I think disability in Asian cultures is treated differently than in other cultures. So I don't know. I hope it's better.
Other than sports, what kind of stuff are you interested in your childhood? What kind of hobbies did you have in your childhood?
In my childhood? Oh, geez. I liked to sketch and doodle as a kid. You know, I was just a normal kid, really. I had my toys that I played with. You know, like I said, I would sketch and doodle. I would read every once in a while. I would play video games. I know I'm going to date myself here with what I'm about to say, but my very first video game system was an Atari 2600.
I love it.
Yeah. And so I got it on my 8th birthday, and I would play video games all the time. It was really only over the last maybe 15 years or so that I stopped playing because the controller started having too many buttons, and it just, like, I just couldn't do it. Now there are adaptations out there now that allow me to do that, but I just haven't picked up gaming in earnest since. But you know, video games are cool. I still like video games, but you know, I'm not as big of a gamer now as I was when the Atari 2600 was around and there was one button.
What was the system seller for the Atari 2600? Like, what was the hot game that you were into?
Jeez. Frogger.
Nice. Pitfall? Remember Pitfall?
Pitfall, yeah. Pitfall. I played Pitfall for sure. I think Frogger for me was my game. That was the game for me. Combat, too, because it had like 26 mini games within the one game. You know, and you could play with the tanks that had the rounds that bounced off walls. So, I mean, that was always fun. A really terrible game on the Atari 2600 was any sports game. Thank goodness sports games are actually good now because, like, Atari basketball was awful.
I think my first system, because I was a big gamer all throughout my childhood too, and I had an older brother. I believe my first system was the Sega Master System, not the Ooh. Sega Genesis, the Sega Master System.
Yeah,
I think Man. That was old school for me, and it had cartridges and also something. It was like a dual. You could insert cartridges. You could also insert almost like a floppy disk. It had two different inserts.
Wow.
Yeah, old school.
Man, I never had that. I will say my all-time favorite home console game, though, is Super Street Fighter II Turbo.
Love it. So who's your main? Who do you main in Street Fighter?
Sagat was my fighter.
Interesting.
Always.
Okay.
Always.
Right on.
I loved him. And, you know, and I actually kind of have a thing for Muay Thai boxing because of the Sagat character in Street Fighter. He's just my guy. I mean, like, his reach is unbelievable, right? I mean, outside of Dhalsim with the stretchable arms and stuff, like, Sagat, just that kick he had is just, I mean, like, you had to fight him close. Otherwise, you weren't going to win.
Just to paint the picture for our younger audience here, you'd go to like the liquor store, the arcade, wherever, and there would be an upright console, Street Fighter II. There would be quarters lined up across the glass of the console, folks just waiting in line to get in and compete. Yeah.
And since I couldn't actually play the arcade consoles, I would just park next to it and watch people fight and then give people pointers as they were fighting. So I guess now that I think about it and talking to you about it, I've kind of always been a teacher and a coach, Danny. I just had a revelation right on your show.
Love it. It's just who you are. It's just part of your essence.
Man, I just had a moment.
That's what we do. We bring live action moments, you know?
Wow.
You mentioned that you were always a sports fan, but were you particularly a soccer fan?
No, not really. Not necessarily growing up as a kid. It just wasn't something that was watched in our house. I mean, I would watch other, you know, all the American sports because they were on TV. But it really wasn't until I started studying German and understanding the culture more and started getting into, on a more deep level, German culture and European culture in general, and discovering that soccer wasn't just kicking a ball around for 90 minutes. And I found it exciting. And so I really started watching the sport around that time, the early mid-2000s. I've been watching it ever since. I love it.
Take us through the first time you ever took the court. Or is it hardwood? Is it court?
It's a court. Yeah, okay, we play on a basketball.
First time you ever took the court, power wheelchair soccer, what was your experience?
I was terrible. I was awful. I was awful. But it was so thrilling for me to just be out there and be playing with people and teammates and things like that. I will say the thing that really hooked me, though, was traveling to my first tournament in San Jose, California. It was a regional qualifier for nationals, and we're playing in a game, and I have the ball, and I'm coming down the right side of the court. So back in the day, we used to play in our everyday chairs and mounted metal cages to the front of the chairs. Now we have special, like, high-powered custom-built wheelchairs to play. But back then, I'm in my manual chair, or not my manual chair, my everyday chair, and I got the ball. I'm going down the court, and it's just me, no defenders in front of me except for the goalkeeper. I'm charging towards the goal. The goalkeeper sees me. He rushes out to come after me. He's not stopping. I'm not stopping. Before you know it, you hear the loudest crash as these two 300-pound chairs collide on the court. Now, I will say, the chairs all have a speed limit of 6.2 miles an hour or 10 kilometers per hour for our other friends around the world. And so we're playing at roughly almost full speed. So you imagine 300-pound chairs colliding at 6 or so miles an hour. It was a pretty impactful collision. And it was that moment right there that sealed the deal for me. I was like, okay, I guess I'm playing sports now.
Yeah, full contact.
I just remember, like, we had landed back in Phoenix, and I called my brother, and I'm so pumped at this point. I go, oh my God. And I told him about the moment that you and I just talked about. And I was just so pumped in that moment. Like you said, it was full contact, and it was just such an exhilarating feeling. I've been playing ever since.
Is the speed limit, like, how do they set that speed limit? You know what I'm saying? Like, do people try to cheat to get around that?
Well, people have tried to cheat. So the way it's done now is there is a machine with little light beams 50 feet apart. And so once you cut the first light beam, the timer starts. And then when you cut the last light beam, it stops. And then you can measure out the miles per hour that way. Or a more advanced system is you get up on this rolling machine, you push the joystick at full force, and then the roller just determines your speed. So yeah, they measure it so that way people aren't cheating. And the reason there's a speed limit in place is because people were, back in the day, making their chairs go faster than they were intended to. And when you get heavy chairs out there and you're going really, really fast, it can get really dangerous. And most of us, if we were to fall over, cannot break our falls with our arms, only with our faces. So they had to put something in place to kind of make sure people weren't going to die out there.
How many players on the court on each team at the same time?
Yeah, so power soccer is 4-on-4 on a basketball court.
With a goalie making 5, or the goalie makes 4?
No, the goalie is 4. So you have the goalkeeper, and then you have the center, and then you have a left wing and a right wing, and everybody pretty much plays offense and defense. And there's no offside rule as there is in the outdoor game.
What position do you play?
I play all over. Right now on my current team, I play in the middle. I play the center position.
Is there like a face-off that you would see in hockey or I guess MLS soccer?
So the match starts just with the regular kickoff, like a regular soccer, where, you know, the team with possession at the beginning will just kick the ball off to their teammate and start play. Now, there are moments where you will have a face-off like hockey. Say, for example, the ball went out of play and the referee can't determine who it went off of last. They'll drop the ball along the touchline and then two players will face off.
How is power wheelchair soccer, how does the strategy differ from like MLS soccer or World Cup soccer?
So power soccer strategically and tactically is kind of more akin to ice hockey. Ice hockey, I mean, has a third dimension where the puck can go over players, but typically most of the play remains flat on the ice, right? You have 5-on-5 in hockey and, you know, you're passing around, you're moving around and you're trying to get the defense to move so you can score. Essentially, power soccer is more like that, even though in Europe, especially over the last few years, them integrating more traditional soccer or football tactics into power soccer, and it's really starting to change the game. I could sit here, Danny, we did not come here to talk about power soccer tactics, although I could spend 8 hours on it, but that's basically what you're seeing now, especially in power soccer today. But I would say, especially for the American style, it's really more like ice hockey with some American football wrinkles thrown in there.
You must have really seen this sport grow over the last couple decades.
Oh my goodness, yeah. I mean, like I was saying, we used to play in our everyday chairs or chairs that were designed to just be used for everyday use. In 2012, the Strike Force power soccer chair was introduced. It's built by a company here in the States. It's built low to the ground with an extra wide base and a very, very sturdy frame. It's built for high performance. If you've never been in one as a wheelchair user, there is nothing else like it.
So how did you fall into broadcasting for power soccer?
As you know, one of my 4 degrees is in broadcast journalism. Or broadcast journalism in English. I did college radio and I loved it. And that's cool. How I got into voiceover. But I also did sports. I broadcasted Sun Devil football, baseball, basketball. And I loved it. I was like, this is awesome. I'd never like broadcasted sports for people before. And I really, really enjoyed it. And so I had gone to work for the company that builds the power soccer chairs because they said to me, they knew that I had some previous broadcasting and radio experience from Arizona State. And they said, we want to start broadcasting and live streaming power soccer tournaments. And we want you to be the voice of it. And I said, sure, but I have this really good job here in Arizona. I don't know if I want to leave. They said, we want to travel the world. I said, I will pack my bags and I will be there tomorrow.
Wow.
So in 2012, they actually flew me out for a tournament, and that was the very first one I ever did. It was awful. I wasn't very good, but it was fun. We did it on an iPad with a gaming headset. It was really, really low budget back then, but it was fun, and it proved that we could do it. And then so in 2013, I moved. I broadcasted the national tournament there. We had some better equipment at that point. And then from there, I just kept doing it. And I went to work for the company for a couple of years. And then we traveled everywhere. My first foray into international broadcasting, we went to Paris for an under-18 international competition, which was a lot of fun. I've been to Brazil, been to Ireland, I've been to Denmark, Finland, Uruguay, Argentina. I was the lead announcer for the 2017 World Cup in Florida. I was part of the broadcasting crew for the 2023 World Cup in Sydney. I've done way more with broadcasting and power soccer than I could have ever imagined when I started in 2009.
How do you prep as a broadcaster for a big, big event?
Well, I think for me, just following the game when the big events aren't going on helps. Understanding the tactics and strategies employed by different countries and regions around the world. It helps now, especially since I've been doing it for so long, that I know most of the players involved, especially for big international competitions. I've seen it enough, so I know most of them personally, and that definitely helps a lot. So I get to recognize and understand their playing styles. I understand some of their tendencies. And so that definitely helps me prepare for a competition. Other than that, really, you know, getting to talk to some of the coaches, getting some insights into the players, insights into the teams, helps me bring some of those layers of that story into a broadcast.
Tony's also a successful voice actor. I know you said you had a past in radio. Obviously, you're a professional broadcaster. What led to voiceover?
College radio. When I was at Arizona State, I worked at KSC, The Blaze, 1260 AM. They're no longer on the actual airwaves these days. It's all digital. That's okay. Man, when I first started working at that radio station, I felt like I had found my people. Like all the weirdos, all the people like who just wouldn't shut up, right? Yep. Found them. I was just so drawn to that radio station. I just tried to learn as much as I could. And one thing that I really took particular hold of was radio production, voicing the PSAs and all the commercials and things. I realized that people get paid to do this. While I was at the radio station, I kind of worked my way up. I became the production director and I imaged the radio station. For those of you that don't know what imaging is, it's all the 98.3, The Rock or whatever that you hear on radio stations. That's all imaging. I started learning how to do that. It was really cool. I really enjoyed it. You know, putting my voice to it, adding sound effects, making my voice sound weird, putting music behind it, doing all those things. And I liked it so much, I started on my own looking for online radio stations that might need imaging. And this was like 2003. So online radio stations were still like a very like niche thing. And I found a guy in Alaska who ran a heavy metal station. He was like, yeah, I need some stuff for my station. So I made some stuff for him and he paid me for it. And I was like, wow, I just got paid for my very first voiceover job.
When you're traveling as a broadcaster, do you have to carry around with you like a travel kit in case you have voiceover auditions?
The answer is yes. And I usually do. I usually do. But February 2024, I am out of town. And I decided I'm only going to be gone for 2 days. I'm thinking to myself, nobody's going to ask me for anything this year. So wouldn't you know it, sure enough, Friday afternoon, I get an email from a casting person who does promos and was like, hey, can you give me a scratch read on this? Or for those of you that don't know what a scratch read is, it's like a template read, a practice read for whoever's actually going to do the job to hear you first and then do what you did, but get paid for it. Can you do a scratch read for me? Did I have my gear? No, but it was a rush job. And so I just recorded it on my phone. I will never do that again. Never. I will always now from now on travel with my stuff.
It's pretty typical of how the universe works, right, Tony?
Of course. And the worst part about it is that I only hear from this person maybe once a year, twice if I'm lucky. So the one time that I'm going to hear from this person likely this year, I had to record it on my phone. And I even emailed this person. I said, look, I had to do this on my phone. I don't have my gear with me this weekend, but I wanted to get this out to you. Here you go. And then you usually don't hear back from them unless they hire you. So
I've made the exact same mistake many times. And then fast forward to 2019 when I was traveling to China with my wife. And we were in Shenzhen, China, the south of China, literally at a factory, who her good friend is the factory boss. Literally at the factory, I had a rush come in, and I recorded an audition in a factory in China. And the audio quality was absolutely horrible.
Did you get the job?
Of course not.
Oh, okay. Well, okay.
I don't think there's no amount of editing or RX software could save that audio quality.
Probably not.
How are you able to edit given your disability, especially when you're on the go? I mean, one thing is in your home setup or whatever that you're familiar with, but what about on the go? How do you even pull it off?
My laptop has a trackpad on it, and so I can get decent quality and edit. When I'm not in my studio, so you can see this thing right here in front of me is a portable keyboard with a trackpad. In fact, that right there that I just flipped is the trackpad portion. That's how I edit in my studio here. I use a custom stick. Actually, I have an example right here. So this thing right here is a stick that I made. This one's kind of busted, but on the end of it is a little like stylus tip. And I have some copper wire running through it all the way to the end. So that way I can get an electrical current from my mouth to the tip of the little stick. And I can control the trackpad with that. Sometimes I can just use my mouth to control the trackpad and move it around a little bit. But otherwise, I don't really have a problem editing on the road.
Just want to mention for the listeners that aren't able to see Tony at the time, he was actually carrying that pin in his mouth and operating it with the muscles in his mouth. Like, super impressive, Tony.
Yeah, I've been doing it all my life, so you get good at things that you've been doing for 40-something years. Anyway, yeah.
Okay, you mentioned the radio earlier. I just got to tell you, even when I'm at the gym, I am almost a 100% exclusive sports talk radio consumer. I love sports talk radio.
I guess it depends on who it is. Some people's opinions I'm cool with, but there are so many dumb opinions out there. And I realize some of them are dumb just for the sake of getting people to listen.
Yep.
But I don't have the mental bandwidth for some of that stuff sometimes.
You know, it's funny. I almost never watch sports. I mean, I really never watch sports. No. I just like, I'm kind of a stats whore. I like following box scores and I like listening to talk radio, but I check box scores every night in bed.
So you love baseball?
I do. I'm a stats whore.
You were a stats whore. You were an analytics guy.
Yeah, exactly right. I really mean this, guys. I don't even watch the games. Like, even the playoffs, I don't even watch it. I don't even care. But I love the box scores. Man, and you better believe I'm checking every one.
You missed a really good game for about three quarters Sunday with the women's NCAA championship. It was a really good game until South Carolina just completely demolished Iowa in the post. Like, they just couldn't handle it.
Regarding power wheelchair soccer, do the players have to have the ability with one of their limbs to control the power of their chair? You know what I'm saying? If someone okay, so how do they pull that off?
No. So I've seen people who can drive with their chin.
Wow.
So they put the joystick under their chin and they drive with that. There's a guy in Argentina who recently retired who's really good with his chin. I've seen people play with a sip and puff. If you don't know what a sip and puff is, it is literally a tube that is connected to the wheelchair controller, and you blow air into it to make the chair do one thing.
Wow.
And you suck air out of the tube to make it do another thing. And if you sip twice, it'll do another thing, and puff twice, it'll do another thing. I've seen people play like that.
Wild.
And yeah, I mean, technology is an incredible thing.
I'll plug this at the end too, but you got to check out Tony's YouTube channel because there's some clips of him playing power wheelchair soccer. It's Tony Jackson VO, VO as in voiceover, Tony Jackson VO. Type that into YouTube. You can see some clips of him playing.
You can see some stuff there. You can see some motivational videos I recorded during COVID. Actually, I haven't put it up yet, but I was in Utah recently for a competitive downhill skiing race. I placed third in my group.
This is unreal, Tony. You're downhill skiing in a wheelchair?
Yeah. Yeah, it's incredible. Wow. I can only describe it so accurately. You really have to see it. So there is a device created by the University of Utah and one of their programs there called Trails. It is called the Tetra Ski. For any of you who have ever seen Paralympic skiing, it's a bucket that you sit in attached to a steel frame with skis attached to it, and each ski has an actuator, which will turn the ski left and right and do all those things. You can control it with a sip and puff, the device that I just mentioned, or a wheelchair joystick.
Unreal.
It's unreal.
So, Tony, what do you get out of coaching power wheelchair soccer?
Sharing what I've learned. I've had the opportunity to learn from some of the best in our sport, and being able to share that with other people who are now coming up and give them the knowledge that they can hopefully one day pass on to somebody else is a big reason I do it. As I discovered during our conversation, I've apparently always been a teacher sitting at those video game arcades. And so it's just kind of within me.
Do you coach young people as well?
I do. Yeah. In fact, I have two teams where I coach and play now. So I have my team that I coach and play. And then I have a group of younger folks. Most of them are under the age of 15.
Tony, what would your advice be to a young person who is severely disabled and they haven't found their niche yet? I mean, you've kind of found some niches that have led to a lot of success for you. What about this young person who has not found their niche? What would your advice be to that person?
Follow the first rule of improv. Yes, and. It's the first rule of improv, right? Yes, and. Don't say no to anything except for drugs, maybe. But other than that, just take opportunities as they come because you never know where they're going to lead. So to be fair, for the first 29, 30 years of my life, I had no idea what I was doing. I had no idea where I was going. I had no direction whatsoever. Because once I left the radio station, so I went back to the radio station. I was in my mid-20s at that point. Once that was over, I didn't know what to do with myself because I understood that radio for me was going to be more challenging because radio stations in very tiny markets aren't wheelchair accessible. In fact, the cities in those tiny markets aren't very wheelchair accessible or wheelchair friendly. So I had to stay in a big city with the infrastructure that I needed to survive. So I just thought to myself, radio, broadcasting, all of those things was over until this opportunity came along through Power Soccer. And it was only then that I could take the experience that I learned from the radio station and combine it with my love for Power Soccer that I was able to create something for myself. Don't say no to opportunities. And always be learning, always be open to new ideas. If what you want to do is not available to you, if you just keep moving and keep saying yes, eventually opportunities will come along where you can create your own thing, or somebody will have created the opportunity to allow you to now do the thing that you've always wanted to do.
Truly an inspiring person. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today.
Thanks, Danny. I appreciate that, man. I do my thing. You know, it's funny. You had said earlier that it must have been challenging moving around so much with a disability growing up. And one thing that I wanted to say that I'll touch on now is that, and I tell people this all the time, out of everybody in my family, I am the person who should move the least. But out of everyone in my family, I am the one who moves the most.
Wow.
My parents have been living in the Southeast for the last 20, 25 years. One of my brothers has been living in the mid-Atlantic for the last 17, 18 years, 20 years, geez. They have not left. In those 20 years, 25 years, I have lived in Arizona, I have lived in Minnesota, I have lived in New Hampshire, I have lived in Virginia, and then back to Arizona a couple times. I just do what I do. When the opportunity arises, I pack my stuff and I go.
When you're having a hard time, as we all do, how do you get yourself out of those dark times?
How do I get myself out of those dark times? Jeez, that's such a heavy question. I usually say, well, at least you're not in a wheelchair. No. But seriously, I actually hit a really hard point during COVID at the beginning. I used to enjoy occasional beers and single malt scotches. But during COVID, I had one particular day where I enjoyed it a little too much. And I quit after that one day. I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. I don't want to go through this anymore. And what led after that was a lot of time, especially during COVID, because we all had time, was to just sit there and do a lot of deep digging and introspection and understanding me. And if you go to my YouTube channel, Tony Jackson VO, you'll see a lot of those videos on there. And a lot of that is just me digging into myself and sharing what I've come to understand about myself. That particular moment has made it easier for me to dig out of moments where maybe I'm not feeling good and maybe I'm beating myself up. Lean on your tribes. It's the only way we can make it through life. And if you haven't found your tribe, just keep looking. I guarantee you will find your people.
Tony's handle is Tony Jackson VO, and VO is as in voiceover, all one word, Tony Jackson VO. You can catch him at that handle on Instagram, X/Twitter, YouTube, and also his website. Once again, Tony Jackson VO. And furthermore, if you need coaching in Street Fighter 2, you know who to call.
Don't call me for that. I had a friend who said to me one time, he goes, you know, you really suck at this game. I bet you I could beat you with my feet. And so he put the controller on the floor and we played a game, a Street Fighter game, and he beat me. Don't come to me for coaching. I will give you moral support, but if you're looking to win, you better go find somebody else.
I always mained Ken. So one of these days, Tony, we got to have the epic matchup, Sagat versus Ken. Best out of three, okay?